Welcome to the Side Action Podcast, the sports gambling show that covers everything in the world of sports betting from A through Z. We'll cover the four major sports, as well as anything and everything in between worth some action, and we'll increase the size of your bankroll. And here we go.
All right, welcome to the Side Action, episode 14. I'm Jim Weglars, a.k.a. Wegs. You can follow me on Twitter at Wegspool.
And this is Steve Roberts, a.k.a. Action. You can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
You can follow the podcast at Side Action Pod. So how was your holiday weekend, Steve?
It was pretty good. I was watching a ton of college basketball Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. Nice. Lounged around a lot and got my couch on. And they're pretty good in college basketball Thursday and Friday, but gave a little bit back in college football Saturday. How about you?
Well, I didn't get to watch a bunch of games. I know the big Gonzaga win over Duke was big on Wednesday night. Mm-hmm. I was kind of traveling. And then, you know, watched a bunch of football, of course, on Thanksgiving Day. I was 0-3 in college. Ugh, my college touch is gone, but I was 3-0 in the pros, so break even, which is great.
I lost the VIG, I suppose.
Yeah, right? I did. I lost like 370 or something like that. But that's okay. I've had a good year so far. I was out in Vegas, did not make it to South Point. Wanted to see all those guys. I heard Duffel Bag Better is back.
Really?
He lost like 100 on that Notre Dame game. I heard he lost over 100 grand. Because he had two 50 grand parlays that were on that, and a 50 grand parlay, a 10 grand parlay, and a 50 grand straight up on that game.
Wow, all on Notre Dame?
Yes.
Damn. Well, so. I lost some on Notre Dame, too. Not nearly that much, though.
Yeah, I lost my 10 bucks.
It's too bad you didn't run into a duffel bag boy in the airport.
Well, I did have him at my party a couple weeks back, so, you know, we're old friends, but it's good to see him back. He must have gone back to the East Coast to get some more cash.
Yeah, maybe the ATMs in Vegas ran out.
So, anyway, it was a good weekend and got back. And, of course, we're getting crushed with winter weather already. It's supposed to be still fall, but it's not here in Chicago. That snowstorm on Monday was awful, and Sunday night into Monday. And, you know, hopefully can make it through.
Yeah, it's just a sign of basketball season starting up. The snow starts falling. I'm ready to rock and roll and college basketball.
That's right. Let's transition. So. All right, well, let's review the pod. We'll do a legislative update first, and then we'll recap our head-to-head. We'll go into the NFL takeaways from Week 12. Then we do have a couple of questions from the mailbag this week. Thank you, listeners. We'll go over college football. There were some huge games this past weekend. And then review the big championship weekend this coming up weekend with the S&P release. And then also spots we are eyeing on championship weekend. Then we'll go back to the NFL for our spots, for our statistics that we always review, the Wegs Index, and then some key injuries, which there were several, as well as our situational spots for the NFL. Cup survivor picks, we'll get back into our head-to-head for college football and pros, and then we'll talk mostly about college basketball at that point. I don't think we have anything on the NBA this week, but we will in the future. How's that sound?
Sounds like a great episode. Let's hop to it.
All right. We should say that tonight, you and your roommate are going to go see a big college basketball game tonight, aren't you?
Yeah, we're heading up to the Gentile Center on Loyola's campus to see Nevada Wolfpacker in town to play the Loyola Ramblers.
That's right. It's a rematch.
Yeah, rematch from that Sweet 16. Or was it the Elite?
I think it was Sweet 16. That sounds
Sweet
right.
Sweet 16. I know that it was a very close contest, but Loyola obviously advanced, and Nevada might have some revenge on their mind tonight.
I'm sure they do. They want to get a little payback on Loyola's turf, so a little segue. All right, so legislative update. We mentioned it last time, but we just wanted to restate that Rhode Island is open for business now as of yesterday, the 26th, becoming the 8th state to legalize betting. So that's exciting, and most of those East Coast places are getting it done.
Yeah, Pennsylvania and West Virginia and now Rhode Island in there too. It looks like these states are kind of falling right in line, and hopefully there's going to be more that follow in the next year.
I agree. We talked about it. Our prediction, at least my prediction, was 23 by the end of next year. Hopefully it's more than that, especially in Illinois, so we can make it legal. Let's get some apps here locally. I know that New Jersey has their own app that they use, and they always talk about it on VSiN that those are kind of sweeping the nation. So it's exciting.
Yeah, here in Illinois with the new governor that should be coming in, I think it'll be right around the corner here also.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. One of the things, just a little aside on that, is one of the things they've been discussing on VSiN is that in general, the handle, and that's a term I learned a few weeks ago, the handle on all these, on all this betting and sports betting is up. So all this talk about mainstreaming kind of sports betting across the country is really increasing the volume of betting, which is kind of what we predicted, at least in terms of how people are consuming the sports and can hear it on the broadcast and people discussing it and all the pregame shows. So that's good news.
Yeah. Another interesting point about Rhode Island is they decided there was some negotiating going back and forth between the owner, the book owners and the state. And ultimately they agreed to share 51% of the profits go to the state for every single sports bet that's made. So I thought that was very interesting that the state retains that much of the handle or the winnings that the books will garner.
Wow. Well, they're going to be very interested in setting those lines.
Yeah. You can see the legislators like behind the back counter like, no, I think that should be eight and a half. It's a bad spread. We need some more money.
Exactly. Well, that's interesting. Well, we talked about that. It's a main driver for revenue. We think states like Illinois that are broke definitely could benefit from it. So in the long run, that's the play, and clearly that's what's going
to
happen.
It'll be interesting to see how many of these states will go after that same approach where they try to get a cut of the winnings. 51% is a very high amount. So
yeah, I wonder if that's based on the volume that they expect, because in other states it's just a flat fee. It's just kind of a fee that they need to use to open it at the sports book. Maybe in smaller states like Rhode Island, the percentage works out better. I'm not sure. So all right, well, let's get into the recap. We went 2-2 this week, so no ground gained. It was a, I was sweating it out there. We went first with the Apple Cup. I was trying to back the Cougs, you know. Cougs have been my team all year. You know, the Stanfords love the Cougs, and the Huskies, as we discussed, they own the Cougs, apparently, especially with Mike Leach as the coach for Washington State. Unfortunately, that rang true again.
Yeah, the snow was really coming down on Friday night. I'm not sure if you caught any of that game, but I think it really threw a wrench in Washington State's game plan. They obviously had the high-flying passing attack, and they just couldn't get anything going with that snow boring down on them.
Right. Yeah, and Gaskin, the running back, went off for Washington. He's a really good player. You'll probably see him in the NFL very soon. But the, like you said, Washington just seems to have Cougs' number. They play good defense against them, and unfortunately, they'll have to wait till next year up in Pullman.
Yeah, they couldn't win that Apple Cup once again. I think that's five in a row now since Peterson got there.
Yeah, that's a shame. So that was in the final. We didn't maybe say that. What was the final in that game?
28-15.
That's right. So moving on to the other big rivalry game that we discussed, I had the same exact handicap, and it didn't work again. Michigan were 4-point favorites at Ohio State. Ohio State's defense looked terrible, especially against Maryland the week before. But even without the defense, their offense just destroyed Michigan, which was the number one defense coming into that game, putting up 567 yards. That's incredible.
It really was incredible. They won the game 62-39, and they put up an astounding 8.46 yards per play against what we thought was one of the best defenses in the country.
Yeah.
Obviously, that was wrong. And, you know, it makes me kind of look back and realize that when you look at Michigan's strength of schedule, it really wasn't all that good outside of Notre Dame and then Ohio State as bookends.
Yeah, I think that when you look at their team, a couple of things stood out for me when you watched the game. Ohio State has pro football players on their team. They have the kind of talent and pedigree. There was a lot of speed on that field that the Wolverines couldn't keep up with. Their blue chip players came to play. Maybe they didn't do that all season, but they basically kind of big boyed Michigan, and it was sad. The khakis, they came to fruition like they've done it many times before, and Harbaugh has not beaten Ohio State yet.
Khakis can't come through in the clutch.
I said it earlier. We'll move to the NFL, back to Thanksgiving Day. My Bears took on the Lions. They were 3.5-point favorites at Detroit. I basically picked this mainly on the handicap that the Lions aren't very good, despite the Thanksgiving improvement year over year. And they came through for me. 23-16, admittedly it came on an Eddie Jackson pick six. Otherwise, it was a tight game the whole time.
Yeah, I still think that the Lions were the right side in this game, even after that outcome.
Yeah.
I was watching the game the whole time thinking that I had it in the bag, or at least to cover with the 3.5 points. And I think some family arrived, and I got off the couch finally to go say hello. And I turned around, and Eddie Jackson was walking into the end zone. So I was like, it's over.
They clearly read that play. They had seen that play in practice because he just jumped all over it, and he was gone. Mm-hmm. But other than that, you're right. It looked like the Lions were actually moving the ball a little bit on the Bears, and you know they moved it down the field. They scored. I was worried, admittedly, but when that pick six happened, I was excited. So,
what did you think of the Bears' celebration there with the Motown, the ode to Motown?
Pretty cool, pretty cool. I mean, I don't know if they had all the rhythm that they needed there, but definitely like the Motown celebration. The last game was Carolina was hosting Seattle, where they were giving up 3.5 points at home, total of 47. You know, I've been on Seattle for several weeks now. Seattle, it was really a great game. This game was a back-and-forth affair. Somehow, Seattle did not have an answer for Christian McCaffrey, who put up 237 yards from scrimmage. However, Russell Wilson is the man, and down the stretch, he converted a big fourth down to give them the chance to win the game, and they did, 30-27, so they won the game outright.
Yeah, Russell Wilson was on fire on Sunday, 339 passing yards and two touchdowns against that Panthers defense. And Graham Gano, who is usually very reliable, missed a 52-yarder to go ahead with 140 left, which left the door open for the Seahawks, and they came right down and kicked a field goal of their own. So another good win for you. I can't say that Carolina was the right side. Obviously, Seattle came back, and they were tough all day.
Yeah, they were in the mix. So, all right, 2-2. We'll see how it goes this week. Segueing into our takeaways from the NFL this week, the first thing I had to say, and this is also a Thanksgiving game, Dallas, they came to play. They kind of beat up the Redskins. We knew the Redskins weren't going to be as game without Alex Smith in there. Colt McCoy was okay, but that defense is really getting it done, and the formula, giving the ball to Zeke, another 30-touch game where he just dominated, really helped them, and that defense is flying around. They got their big win, and they're on top of the NFC East.
Yeah, and Amari Cooper and Dak Prescott had a pretty good link-up on Thursday as well. There's two touchdown passes to Amari, and if those two start clicking, they could really take their offense to another level.
Yeah, they got a big game on Thursday again. It was kind of unique that you're going to have both teams coming off a Thursday night game playing on a Thursday, so they get a full week off. And they play the Saints this week. We'll see if that Dallas team is still game. The other one is your Colts, man. The fifth straight win this week. It wasn't pretty. They played the Dolphins. I thought that they're going to beat up on the Dolphins pretty bad, but Colts, they got the win, but they didn't look super impressive. Andrew Luck kept throwing touchdowns, and they're looking great.
Yeah, a couple of interceptions for Andrew Luck, too, and the defense finally got to him with a sack, so that streak is over. Yeah. But it really goes to show that Miami came out tough in that game, and they looked like they were going to pull out the victory for most part of it until Adam Gase got a little bit uncharacteristic and bland with the play calling there in the fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. They had several three and outs in a row, and then the Colts just couldn't be stopped on offense.
Right.
Came down with two scoring drives, and then the last one to ice the game with a field goal. So another big win, but definitely not a high-flying victory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, we'll see what happens. They go to Jacksonville. Jacksonville's struggling. They can keep it on a roll. I actually like them for the playoffs, and we'll see what happens down the stretch. But they just have a good mix right now. So speaking of potential playoff teams, and I hate to say this because when I went to school out in Colorado, I couldn't stand the Broncos. But Denver Broncos, two big wins. They beat the Steelers this Sunday. They had beaten the Chargers the week before. Now, they've given up a ton of yardage on defense, but they keep the teams out of the end zone. The Steelers turn the ball over way too many times in this game. But when you look at their schedule, despite being 5-6, they could easily win 10 games with this schedule they have forward. They go to Cincinnati this week. So watch out for those Broncos.
Yeah, they definitely are playing well. Their defense has been outstanding the last couple of weeks, but I still don't think they're a playoff team.
Right.
I mean, they're much better at home there in the thin air than they are on the road. So although they're definitely heavy favorites this weekend in Cincinnati, I don't know.
Yeah, I hear you. It's Case Keenum, you know.
Mm-hmm.
The last point I put on there is the Green Bay game. Green Bay, Minnesota had a big game on Sunday night. It was one of the – I actually could have won that pool. Actually, wouldn't have won it in the end, but I was close in Mahar pool this week, where Aaron Rodgers and the Packers have not won a game on the road this year. They're 0-6. It drops them to 4-6-1 in the record. I think they have like a 3% chance to make the playoffs now, despite Aaron Rodgers' proclamations of all the teams ahead of them. You know, I'm not saying disappointed. I don't want to see the Packers win, but I'm surprised to see the Packers play so poorly, especially when they have to make big plays. It seems like Rodgers can't make the play.
Yeah, I don't know if you could put it all on Rodgers, though. That offensive line was piss poor on Sunday. The Vikings were in the backfield on every single passing play. And then as soon as Bakhtiari went down, you knew the game was over.
It was over,
because
they
just couldn't protect Aaron at all. Although he did have a touchdown, potential touchdown pass in the hands of Davante Adams at the end that could have got the cover, and he missed him.
He missed him. Yeah, he overthrew it. Fourth and one, they throw deep, and he just, dang. Yeah, that's right. But, hey, good for Minnesota. They're still in the mix as well for the wild card. So.
And now the Packers are laying 14 points this week against Arizona.
It's crazy.
Not sure how I feel about that.
That's a lot of points, but they are playing Arizona. I guess we can talk about that later. Oof. All right, let's look at our mailbag. We have a couple questions this week, which is always exciting. Thank you, listeners. How do you determine the amount that you put towards a bet each time?
It's a really good question, and something that a lot of nascent gamblers really struggle with early on. I'll answer it two ways. I think initially, if you're kind of a beginner gambler in the early stages of learning how to do it, my recommendation would be to do what you call flat betting, which means that you make the exact same wager on every game, pick out what you think is comfortable as a unit amount for you, whether it's $5 or $10 initially, and just bet every game with that same amount. Over time, you're going to get a little bit more comfortable with how you're wagering and try to identify some games that you think you might have a greater edge in than you would in some of your other picks. Obviously, it goes without saying, there are going to be some wagers that you like a lot more than others. And eventually, once you build up some experience in what you're doing, it may make some more sense to increase those wagers to two or three units occasionally when you think you have a greater edge identified.
Well, I will say that you basically laid this out early in our podcast, and I've followed that regimen every week. Now, this is actually the first week I went to five bets instead of six. So I'll just speak plainly. I do a $10 bet every time, or usually it's 11 because the VIG. But I'm targeting a $10 unit, basically. I do five bets a week. Currently, it's always been three college, two pro. I'm probably going to invert that this week because of my success and also the lack of games on the college slate this week. But it's been really good to see because I'm also tracking it, and you can see how you're doing. One of the things we've talked a lot about this stuff about, you know, increased VIG on certain bets, and that's another layer that you have to look into, you know, not paying more than that $11 for $10 bets. And it works. The system works. Now, granted, you got to make smart bets. You still got to be right. But I think that over time, you're just building up your bankroll. And if you don't go crazy and try to do some, $50 on this thing, even though your normal bet is 10, consistency works, especially over the long haul. And I agree with Action 100%. And thank you, Action. You've doubled my bankroll as a result of that.
All right. Look at that. Side Action Podcast doing wonders.
That's right. Sometimes I wish it started with 1,000 instead of 100, but hey. So, all right. Well, that's great. Question two, what does it take for oddsmakers to move a line? Amount of bets or a certain amount of money?
That's a really good question, too. Nowadays, there's certainly a lot more handle that's in the market, and the public definitely has their say in some games, especially in the NFL. When you roll into January and February and the playoffs, there is probably a certain amount of money that would be termed public money, which could move a line, half a point or a point. But oftentimes when you're talking about normal games, which don't get a serious heavy handle from the public, then usually the odds makers would only move a line in the case of who the better is.
Okay.
So they know in some of these sports who their sharper players are, and they're only going to move the lines if they get a heavy bet from a certain player or a group of players.
Right.
Oftentimes they wouldn't really shade a line or move a line at all just from a large amount of money on one side or a large amount of bets. It's usually whoever's making those bets is what causes the lines to move.
Interesting. That's something that, you know, I've been like, I'm promoting VSiN, we got to ask them for promotion. But these guys talk every Monday. I hear the guys from the book. They talk about how they did and everything, and they talk about their exposure and all that kind of stuff. That's what they're looking at, right? They're looking at their exposure, and they're going to come out on both sides of it or not, be cited or whatever. So for me, you know, as a bettor, I mean, I'm not going to worry about the line moving until it does move. But I can say from my personal experience that when I look at the lines on BetOnline, that's the only place I'm looking at the VIG, you know, I'm looking at the VIG and trying to get as close to, you know, minus 110 as possible. If I see that the bet is lower than that, let's say it's minus 105 or it's minus 120 or something, you know, they're trying to get you to bet it a certain way, right, mm-hmm. in that regard. So I kind of guess, basically, if I look at that line and see it, I'm pretty much knowing it's going to eventually get to 110 and move whatever corresponding way. So I'm not sure what on the other side that they're using to determine that. But for me as a bettor, I'm kind of waiting until I see that minus 110. Or if I really like the bet, the minus 105 to get a little bit less VIG. Mm-hmm. So. All right, well, let's roll into our college recap. Week 13, some huge games this past weekend. Let's start off with the Oklahoma and West Virginia game. We discussed this on the last podcast. We knew it was going to be a shootout. It was crazy. It actually exceeded the Rams-Chiefs game. The final score was 59-56 in regulation time.
Yeah, unbelievable.
And as you noted, 1,370 yards combined. That's incredible.
It's almost like a game of 7-on-7 when you were a kid and no lines and just throwing for touchdown after touchdown after touchdown. And that's what it came out to be. There was a huge penalty called and against West Virginia. I'm not sure if you saw the game, but West Virginia was going in for a go-ahead score, and they threw a flag against a player for blocking out of bounds, which was crazy. Called it back, and they ended up having to punt on that drive, and then OU came down and scored themselves. So that swung the outcome of the game. But beyond that, obviously, there was just no defense in this game, and that was my main takeaway from both sides.
Yeah, so the over was a good call. Probably, again, I don't know what the over-under is. We'll talk later for the Texas game, but, you know, that's it sets up Texas-Oklahoma rematch. In another game that probably was not bet as the over, but in live betting, it'd be interesting how that worked. We had the Texas A&M and LSU. This was at A&M. This game went to 7 overtimes. The final score was 74-72. Turned out to be, I guess it was a cover in this case for LSU. Mm-hmm. It just was insane that the guys just couldn't stop each other once they got in overtime. They were going for 2-point conversions and sometimes converting, sometimes wouldn't, but it was just insane. In the end, A&M did get the 2-point conversion to win the game, but I didn't think LSU had it in them to score that many points.
No, I mean, you can count me over here as somebody who was on the under. It was 48, and I will be honest, it was going to go over regardless of the overtime.
Okay.
But I did also have A&M -2.5, and I stayed up late on Saturday night to watch that thing. I turned it off as Kellen Mond threw an interception with about 40 seconds left, which essentially would ice the game. I think I switched back to USC and Notre Dame. And then 5 minutes later, I see a notification on my phone that A&M had tied the game.
Yep.
It was incredible. Apparently, Mond had his knee down. They got the ball back one more play, converted on a fourth down. And then as they were coming down, they put 1 second back on the clock, and A&M threw a touchdown pass to tie it up. Well, what ensued after that? Ed Orgeron gets a Gatorade bath.
He got dumped by the Gatorade. Yeah, exactly.
And then after that, it was 7 overtimes back and forth. I thought that LSU was going to lose the game and A&M was going to cover at least 3 times. And obviously that didn't end up happening, but it was an epic, epic game. Something that I'll never forget.
Exactly. Nobody there will forget it for sure. Another big game was Notre Dame going to USC. Notre Dame was, you know, 13-point favorites, depending on when you picked it up. I actually only had it at, I think, at 10.5. I got it really early in the week. But they did not cover. They won 24-17. They had a cover late, and then they let them score late, and that was crushing. I heard, like I said, Duffelbag Boy got beat really bad on this. The public got crushed in this game.
Oh, I'm sure. Yeah, I think it was like a record number of bets that were on Notre Dame on Saturday night. And, I mean, let's be honest, even though Notre Dame was covering there at the end, I think we both can agree that USC was the right side in that game. They were moving the ball all night long, and that was really my biggest takeaway is how poorly Notre Dame's defense performed on Saturday.
Yeah, I don't know what to say about USC. They're not that great of a football team, and they actually kept their coach. Clay Helton did not get fired, surprisingly. But Notre Dame was probably doing just enough to win. They knew that they win the game, they're going to be in the playoff, which they are. But what can you say? Right now in the S&P Plus, the top five teams are Alabama, Clemson, Georgia, Oklahoma, then Michigan, followed by Notre Dame, Central Florida, and Ohio State. So it's interesting. We know that Alabama's the best and Clemson at two. You got Georgia at three, though. So they're going to be playing in the SEC title game. I don't know. It's a tough situation for them.
Yeah, I think to answer your question, if OU and OSU end up losing this weekend, my first look would be Georgia, regardless of the outcome in the SEC championship. As long as they don't get blown out by 40 points, they're certainly going to be in line for that fourth spot.
Yeah, most handicappers or people who do indexes show Georgia as the third best team, so it would kind of be tough. You know, they basically are playing the best team now. It's not fair to them. You know, I'm gonna wave the flag for Central Florida. I know it's kind of weird to do that, but they've won, 25, maybe 26 games in a row, especially if they win this weekend. It just opens the door. We kind of discussed a little bit before the pod. It's got to be an 8-team playoff somehow. You know, there's an article floating around about if you eliminate these conference title games and just go right to the 8-team playoff after the regular season from last week into that, it would be so exciting, you know, putting a Central Florida going to Alabama or Notre Dame, you know, hosting Ohio State or something. That would be a way bigger game than what you're going to see this weekend. And hopefully somebody gets the idea that they can make just as much money doing that.
Yeah, and even more. And the argument from the NCAA has always been that they don't want these student athletes, in quotes, away from the classroom for an extra week. But I think eventually the public perception and the media wave of discussion is going to carry them into an 8-team playoff. It's just a matter of time.
Yeah, every other level does it. I mean, the other levels in football do it. So, I mean, I don't really think that's a good argument. It's clearly about money. They don't want the integrity of the bowl system or whatever. To me, if you could have home games in Alabama, Notre Dame, and Georgia for that matter, I mean, that would be incredible. I mean, those, first of all, the fans would benefit from that because they don't have to travel to those, you know, remote destinations. And then also money comes through those towns versus going to Georgia or, Atlanta or wherever they're playing those other games, the title games. So let's transition for championship week. What spots are you eyeing this week?
I think we're both on this Big 12 championship. It's Texas and Oklahoma and a rematch of that great game from earlier in the season. And Texas is currently a 7.5-point underdog to Oklahoma. Remember, they did beat them last time, and the total is set at 78.
Yeah.
This game is going to be played at a neutral site at AT&T Stadium in Arlington. And Tom Herman, as an underdog again, as they're getting over a touchdown against OU, I think I'm going to be on the Texas Longhorns again, mainly because of that poor Oklahoma defense. I just can't get out of my mind. The last 4 weeks, they've given up 56 to West Virginia, 40 to Kansas, 47 to Oklahoma State, and 46 points to Texas Tech. Their defensive metrics are just terrible. 84th ranked and 107th ranked in defensive success rate. And I think that the Texas Longhorns offense is going to find some ground here with Ellinger looking good, and he's going to come in there and put some points up. I like the over 78 as well.
I got to get on that over now because there's no way. 78 is really low for this game. They played last time. What was the final score? 48-45?
Yep.
That's 93. Like you said, Oklahoma can't stop anybody. They don't care to stop anybody. They just can outscore everybody. And, you know, Tom Herman is underdog. He's just great as in the underdog role. He rallies the troops and make it happen. So I do like that handicap as well. So what about the SEC championship? You got Georgia, 14-point underdogs versus Alabama. This is in Georgia Dome, Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta. It's almost like a home game for them in a way, right?
Yeah.
So what do you say there?
Well, you know, just to clarify, I think I'm looking here at my odds, and it actually is about 13.5 in some books here.
Yeah.
So I did actually make a wager on this already, and I bought that half point up to 14 for a minus 120 VIG. And really, I'm just looking at the S&P metrics here. Bill Connolly has these two teams as only about a 3-point difference. And if, you know, if you look back to last year's national title game, virtually the same squads, And Alabama was only a 3.5-point favorite in that game.
Right.
So what's really changed in the last year? Not much, if you ask me. Alabama has obviously run over a number of their opponents this year. They have the number 2 ranked offense and the 6th ranked defense. But when you really dive into that schedule, they haven't faced an offense like Georgia yet this year.
True.
The best team that they played offensively was probably Missouri. And obviously they beat them pretty handily. But Jake Fromm has been playing really well lately. And this Georgia running game is on point right now. They're just running over opponents with Swift. And I think that they're going to be good enough to keep this game within 2 touchdowns. And I like them to cover this 14.
I agree with you. I think that besides Alabama going to LSU, they really haven't played anybody outside of their building with any salt. So, you know, I'm not sure about the Georgia defense against Alabama's offense, but I think that it will be a track meet, and I think that Georgia can keep up. And they probably can make enough plays because they do have – they have NFL players on their field too. So it's definitely a great game, the best of all the championships for sure. No doubt. I'm excited to watch the game. And so if you get that 14, I mean, I've looked at it at 13, so we'll see if I pull the trigger there. But you get up to 14, for sure you'd take that. All right, another game we'll kind of review later in our head-to-head. We'll go with the American title. That's Memphis and Central Florida. Mm-hmm. One of the spots I'm eyeing that we've talked about a little bit is that Marshall is going to Virginia Tech. This is a rescheduled game. They got, you know, that was that hurricane stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
That they got.
Yeah, the hurricane weekend.
So at this moment, Marshall's a 4-point underdog on the road. According to S&P Plus, Marshall's a better team. Now, we've had the situation happen before. Virginia Tech did beat UVA last week, which is a bit of a shock. However, I got to stick with Marshall here. I think they're a better team. They're going to be, it's almost like a little bowl game for them. And the Hokies, as much as they played well last week, I don't see him doing it 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah, I think, you know, I was a little bit shocked to see that outcome last Friday. You and I were both in agreement that we thought that Virginia Tech would be in a letdown spot and not really have much motivation to go after this bowl. But turns out they did have some motivation, and that gives me a little bit of pause here. But I did look into the numbers a little bit, and Marshall has a very, very tough defense. 7th ranked in the S&P Plus. And they should be able to stop Ryan Willis in that Hokie offense in the passing game. And the Hokies don't really have much of a running game either. Mm-hmm. So I expect that it's going to be a pretty low-scoring game. And anytime you're looking at a low total like that, you do see some value there with the underdog. And I like this play from you.
All right. We wanted to just mention the other 2 championships. One was Big Ten championship, which, as we know, Ohio State beat Michigan badly. So they're going to play Northwestern. At the moment, they are between a 14 and a 14.5-point favorite. This game is played, where are they playing?
Indianapolis. I believe, at Lucas Oil. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I don't have a strong feeling about it. Northwestern is one of those teams, they're really well coached by Fitzgerald. I think that he recruits guys that are tough, and they play his system, and you can't fault his results on the field. On paper, it's just a total mismatch. So I think this number's fine, 14.5. I wouldn't jump all over the Wildcats here. I'm rooting for them. I hope they can take out Ohio State, but I don't see the angle.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think the spread is spot on. 2 touchdowns is probably right where these 2 teams are rated at. Mm-hmm. But one angle that I like here is the over. Right now, the total is sitting at 60.5, and Ohio State is going to be looking to run up the score, I imagine, trying to show the committee that they belong in that 4th spot. Because between them and Oklahoma, if they both win, it's really going to be a coin flip. Yep. And I'll be looking for Ohio State to run up that score. And we all know that their defense is pretty poor. So surely Northwestern's going to get some points on the board too. And I see this 60 or 61 as something they could cover easily.
I like that angle. That's a better angle for me to bet, for sure. The other one is the ACC championship. This is Clemson is playing Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh somehow iced the Coastal Division a while ago, right, to play in this game. Clemson is definitely the second-best team in the country. Right now, they're 26.5-point favorites. I saw it earlier at 23.5. That was the opening. Really? But, Clemson is going to destroy Pitt. I don't know if there's an angle there for me as well. That's a big number. Clemson has been covering. They're just kind of running roughshod over the ACC. Pitt, I think they have a pretty good offense, but I don't think they can keep up with this Clemson team.
Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte.
Oh, okay.
This game Charlotte, will be played.
Very nice. Kind of like a home game for Clemson then.
Yeah, I don't really have an angle on this game either. One thing that I do know is that Pittsburgh relies on its run game very heavily, and Clemson has one of the top-rated rush defenses in the nation. Mm-hmm. That front four just stops teams in their tracks, and I don't think that Pittsburgh is going to be able to do much on offense. It shows here with a 53-point total and a 27-point spread
it's weird
that odds makers aren't expecting Pittsburgh to score much at all. And I would probably lean towards Clemson in this game, but I certainly won't be betting it at nearly four touchdowns.
Right, right, exactly. All right, and the last one we wanted to mention, which is, you know, we're our darlings, and now they're kind of – Utah State got knocked out. That was another bet I lost. Boise State took out Utah State last week in a tough game. Fresno is going back to play Boise State for the championship of the Mountain West. So in the last meeting, that was another bet I lost. Fresno went to the blue the blue turf, and they lost up there, so it's just a rematch. At this moment, Boise is 2.5-point favorites, up to 3. It opened at 1.5. You have any angles on this one?
Yeah, very interesting that Fresno was actually favored in this game the last time around.
Yes.
They were in Boise, and now it's nearly flipped to the opposite side, and Boise's the 2.5-point favorite.
They are.
This game is on the blue turf again in Boise.
Right.
And it's going to be a tough spot for Fresno, although they do have revenge on their minds. I probably don't have a bet on this game, but I would be interested in watching to see which one of these teams can probably pull out that New Year's Six bowl game, presuming that UCF loses, which we'll talk about later.
Absolutely, absolutely. So, all right, reserve the other ones for the head-to-head because we have a couple head-to-heads in that one. Let's jump into the NFL again for Week 13. Let's look at the updated statistics and the yards per play statistics you have here. The net yards per play, number one, Chargers again. They're up to 1.3 now. They destroyed Arizona last week. Pittsburgh's at 1.2 despite dropping, two games? Oh, playing badly at Jacksonville and losing last week. Kansas City at 1. There's my Bears at 0.7. And then you have kind of a 1, 2, 3, 4, 5-way tie with Minnesota, the Rams, the Texans, the Packers, and Ravens all at 0.6. At the bottom, not surprisingly, you see Oakland at minus 1.1, Arizona at minus 1.1, Detroit minus 0.8, Miami minus 0.8, and six other teams at minus 0.6. Have any comments on these statistics this week?
Yeah, Oakland and Arizona just bringing down the league, playing for that number one pick, futility at its finest.
Yeah.
No other real comments outside of that. Your Chicago Bears continue to ascend, and it shows in that WAGS index.
It does.
Any updates there?
Yeah, well, there were updates. Bears are still number one, shocker. The Chargers actually edged out the Saints this week for number two. They're really close in the index. The Saints are 3, Rams down to 4. Surprisingly, Baltimore's up at 5. I think that's – obviously, their defense is great and their schedule's pretty bad. They put Lamar Jackson in. They've been running the ball very effectively. Houston is actually the 6th team in the index. Kansas City dropped all the way down to 12th after the game against the Rams and what happened last week. So we'll see how it shakes out. I think that the Steelers dropping out of the top 5 is mainly because they haven't been playing so good, especially on the road. They're going to get back home. They'll probably get right. But we'll see. We'll talk about that one too. A lot of notable injuries this week. The Chargers, as we talked about, they've been playing great, but Melvin Gordon, their star running back, he basically sprained his MCL. He's out for a few weeks. They haven't even specified it.
Mm-hmm.
Xavier Rhodes, a cornerback from Minnesota, you could see in the game, he pulled up his hammy. He just grabbed his hamstring. I heard he's probably going to play.
Really?
Yeah, I know. Wow. I was surprised to hear that. But we'll see. He'll definitely be not as effective as he is normally, and they're playing at the Patriots, so that's a big matchup. Your Marlon Mack of the Colts, he's in the concussion protocol, which is no good. We'll see who's going to step in for him. Naeem Hines, maybe. Your guy, Jack Doyle, tight end, it was a kidney.
Yep, lacerated kidney.
So they originally listed as an unspecified torso injury, but it's a lacerated kidney. He's out for the year. So Eric Ebron will take the reins. He's playing great.
More touchdowns for Ebron.
11. For Jacksonville, this is big news. They're going to bench Blake Bortles.
Yeah, it's the Cody Kessler era in Jacksonville.
That's going to be short-lived too, but hey. And then Leonard Fournette has been playing great when he came back from his injury, but But he basically throws a punch after the end of the third quarter, which knocked him out of that game, and looks like he'll be suspended for this coming game too.
Yeah, I was kind of thankful that Fournette got knocked out, because that helped me along to my Buffalo bet on Sunday, because he was running the lights out before he went out of that game.
Yeah, exactly. And that's kind of their whole attack. With him out, we'll see what happens. The Colts are going down there. That'll be an interesting game. Okay, so what spots do you like this week, action in the NFL?
Well, I got a one or two that I picked out, one of which I think we'll talk about later in the Chargers game. Mm-hmm. But I like the aforementioned Jacksonville Jaguars. Hear me
against
out.
Against your
hear
Colts, huh?
Yeah, against Indianapolis. This is a home divisional dog. Yep. And I think we both can agree that Jacksonville looks like they have lost the season. Mm-hmm. But this defensive unit for Jacksonville has some pride. And not only Jalen Ramsey, but I think some of the other defenders on this team realize that they are going to have to step up and win some football games. Obviously, Blake Bortles is on the bench. Fournette's going to be out this weekend in all likelihood, assuming he loses that appeal. This defensive unit is going to step up and play. And Jack Doyle now being out has affected this Colts offense, as we saw early on in the season. And I'll also note that the center, Ryan Kelly, missed out last week, and he's still 50-50 to come back this week. So I think this is just a good spot for Jacksonville. And the look-ahead line on this game was Indianapolis -2 or 2.5, and it's now gone up through that key number of 3, and I'll jump on the value there and take the Jaguars.
Okay. This is a stay-away spot for me, but I understand the reasoning here. Jacksonville, they're out of the playoffs, so now they can be spoiler. They can. It won't ruin the Colts season if they lose, but they definitely have been on a roll. They won 5 straight. Andrew Luck has played great. He's passed for multiple touchdowns in all these games. So I'm sure they're going to take that to heart. However, it's just tough for me to back the Jags. I mean, with Kessler at the helm, they don't have Fournette. I mean, this could be a really low-scoring game, actually, if it's played right. To your point, Jacksonville's, in my metrics, they're in the top 10 in defense. They're, you know, top 5 against for yards against and 8 points against. It's the turnovers. And if you remove Blake Bortles from the mix, he's the turnover machine. So maybe you're right. Maybe this is a good play for the Jags.
Yeah, we'll see if Kessler can hold on to the ball this weekend, hopefully.
Yeah. I've noted a few games that we'll talk about it. I'm not sure if I'm jumping on it. You know, the Broncos were going to the Bengals. When I first look at this spot, I wished I would have jumped on it. I think the Broncos were either dogs, they were really slim favorites, which I appreciated. Now they're up to 3.5, which is that key number. The Bengals are 32nd in yards against and points allowed. They're basically the worst defense in the league. So the Broncos will carve them up. Whether they're going to be able to cover that 3.5, I'm not sure, but of note.
And now Andy Dalton's out too, so for the year. Even another ding against the Cincinnati Bengals there. But you're right, laying 3.5 on the road is difficult, especially for a team who doesn't play well on the road.
Exactly. Another spot is the Jets. Now this number's come down when I first put it on here. The Jets are, I believe, 9-point dogs at Tennessee. Tennessee, to me, is a good team, but they've hit a dip. They lost at the Colts. They lost last night pretty badly to the Texans. The Jets aren't good. They're not good, but if it's 9-10 points, that's a lot of points to cover for a team that doesn't score that many points.
Yeah, I think we saw it last night. Even though Mariota was nearly perfect, they still only got 17 points on the board. I know that this is a very defensive-minded team, and laying 9 against anybody is tough to do.
Exactly. Another spot that I like, I know these are really crappy teams, and I know you're not going to go there with me, but the Bills are playing at Miami. It's a road spot. 5 points is too much. These teams in my index are equal, essentially. So I'm not saying the Bills are going to win outright, but I think 5 points is too many. And with Josh Allen back, he just adds another dimension to that offense for the Bills. He can run the ball. He's got the big arm. Miami, look at all the indexes, even in the yards per play index stuff. They're not that good of a team. They somehow are competitive. I'm not sure how, but they even with Tannehill back last week, they gave up a ton of yards against the Colts. So I would take the 5 points with Buffalo.
Yeah, I'm right here with you on this one. Josh Allen came back last week and played really well. Adds a whole nother dimension with his ability to run with the ball. And Sean McDermott is really a plus coach in this league. And obviously he proved it last year, taking this team to the playoffs.
He did.
So catching 5 points on the road, I'm right there with you on Buffalo this week.
All right. The last one we've got on here, I'm not sure if I put this or you did. Chargers are 3.5-point dogs at Pittsburgh. Pittsburgh hasn't been playing too great lately, but we know they're a different team at home. It's going to be a primetime game. Phillip Rivers has been hucking and chucking. But how do you feel about that with Melvin Gordon being out?
Yeah, I actually added that one to the list here. And I think that this is just a spot where Pittsburgh is going to be a little bit flat. They're coming out of playing in Denver. They exerted a lot of energy last week, and now they're coming back home. And even though the Chargers will be without Melvin Gordon, Austin Eckler has really played well in his absence.
Yes.
And Phillip Rivers is just on an absolute tear right now. Set a new NFL record on Sunday with completion percentage. Mm-hmm. And this Chargers offense is really moving the ball, and the defense has been much improved as well. Joey Bosa's back, and week after week, they're just improving, and I expect that they're going to be able to cover this 3.5-point spread on the road.
Okay. I think that that's a good analysis. I don't know. I do think Pittsburgh's going to play a much better game this week. For whatever reason, they're so inconsistent, and they'll go home and prime time, you know. Big Ben, he'll be chucking, but it's going to be a must-watch.
Mm-hmm.
For a Survivor segment, I've got two games identified. If you're still in, hopefully you are and you're going to win. You can send us a check. So the first game is Packers at home against the Cardinals. They're 14-point favorites. I don't think they'll necessarily cover the 14, but they're going to beat that team. And then the other one is the Seahawks against the Niners. They're 10-point favorites at home. I like that game quite a bit.
Yep, I agree with both of those. Very outstanding picks.
Thank you. All right, let's move on to our head-to-head segment. First game, it's the American title. It's Memphis. They're getting 3.5 points against Central Florida. What say you on this one, Action?
I'm all over Memphis here. Right. I wish that I would have gotten it at 7, like it opened earlier over the weekend, but I missed that.
Yep.
As of this afternoon, 61% of the bets are on Memphis, and that would mark the first time in over a year that UCF hasn't been the majority betting favorite in a game. And I think a lot of this has to do with the big injury to quarterback Mackenzie Milton. They had the 7th rated offense before the injury. And now after that nasty looking knee injury, I think it not only has an effect on the field, but has an effect in the minds and the psyches of those players for UCF, seeing your leader, your quarterback go down in that kind of an agonizing fashion is something that sticks with you. Beyond that, the other side of my handicap has straight to do with this running game out of Memphis. They have a serious edge there with the 4th ranked rushing offense, 1st in rushing marginal explosiveness. This running back, Darrell Henderson, has gone for over 1,700 yards this year and 19 touchdowns.
Mm-hmm.
UCF has a decent defense, but ranked 34th and only 62nd in marginal efficiency. So I think that Henderson and the running game will run all day and all night, move the clock, and I like Memphis to win this game outright on the money line, too.
Ooh, look at this guy.
What do you got in retaliation?
All I'm going to say is this is a simple narrative. Central Florida has one shot to be in the playoff. It's not likely. But if you get those other teams losing on Saturday, Central Florida gets the win, they could make it in. They're basically playing for 26 in a row. And I mean, what else can you say? They're playing the teams on their schedule. I do believe that they played early in this year and Memphis did cover the number against them, right? It was a much higher number. So there's kind of a double motivation. And I think they're going to play for their fallen leader. I think it's the other side of the coin. I think UCF's going to win this game. I'm not saying they're going to crush them, but they're going to cover that number. And I think they're going to win convincingly.
Okay. It's going to be a great game on Saturday. I'm excited to watch it.
Absolutely. The other one is the Pac-12 championship, which is actually on Friday night. It'll be at the end of our happy hour that we're hosting.
Uh-huh.
I know Ridgeway was asking me what time the happy hour was going to end. So we've got the Utes. They're 5-point dogs against Washington. They'll be playing at Levi Stadium in San Francisco. So it's a neutral site. And in this one, I'm going to go against Ridgeway and the Huskies. I was on the Huskies earlier this year. I actually think, looking back, they probably should be in the Final Four, as I predicted. They have really good metrics, but they lost some games because, for some reason, they can't put teams away. They can't cover big – this isn't a big number, but they can't cover numbers when they get it. And that's kind of my argument here. Utah's won their last 7 of 8 games. They did play early in the year and were handled handily by Washington, 21-7. But I think it's a different team. And I think that the Utes, they're going to come ready to play. And I'm not sure Washington's playing for anything more than just winning the Pac-12 and go to the Rose Bowl.
Well, I mean, in my opinion, the Rose Bowl is kind of a big prize at the end of this season.
Sure, the granddaddy.
But I like Washington here. I think that they showed that their running game is on track last weekend in Pullman, and they really have a stout defense. I think we've talked about this week over week. The Utah Utes rely on their running game heavily, and Washington should be able to stack the box and make Utah a little bit more one-dimensional and throw the ball, and that plays right into the hands of the Washington Huskies defense. They have one of the best secondaries in the NCAA, and they already beat this team 21-7, and I think they'll do it again and cover this 5 points.
All right. Well, we'll see you on Friday night after a couple cocktails. All right, the two NFL spots we're looking at. First is the Thursday night matchup. New Orleans is going to Dallas. They're taking on this great Dallas defense I've been promoting. Right now, they're 8-point favorites on the road at Dallas, which is a big number. What say on this one, Action?
I like the New Orleans Saints to continue their rolling ways and go into Dallas and throw up big numbers again. Drew Brees played really well last Thursday night, and I think that it's going to continue into this week. And Michael Thomas and Kamara and the running game will just put up tons of points again, and I'm riding this New Orleans Saints train into the ground, and hopefully the Super Bowl.
Yeah, yeah, that's your, one of your picks. I would say that normally don't bet against New Orleans. I said that a couple weeks ago, but to me, Dallas is really good when they're the underdog. They have a very good pass defense. The way you beat them is running the ball, so yes, they'll probably give Kamara and Ingram the ball quite a bit in this one. I just think that if you're going to beat New Orleans, it's going to be on the road, and you're going to beat them by running the football. And I think that as good as New Orleans has been against the run, Zeke's a different animal. You're going to see a classic Dallas try to control the clock game, and 8 points is a big number, so I like that it's up to eight, and I'll definitely take those points. Last game, we're going to go Minnesota is going to New England. Minnesota's a 6-point dog at New England. I know where you stand on this one, but I mean, for me, Minnesota's a pretty damn good team. They have to keep winning. They have to keep pace with the Bears. It's a hotly contested wild card race. New England, yeah, they probably have to win the game, but they've got their division almost locked up already. 6 points, I just don't see it. I think that's too many points for this Minnesota defense. What say you, Steve?
Well, the look-ahead line for this one was at a full touchdown, and it's come down under the touchdown now to 6. And I can't really understand why this New England team has been really good after Thanksgiving year over year, and they're only a week removed from the bye. Bill Belichick has probably been scheming for this game, and I think that he'll have some things that Kirk Cousins probably will be a bit confused by on that side of the ball. But really, the largest piece of my handicap relies on Xavier Rhodes' injury.
Okay.
And I know you mentioned that you think he's going to play. Well, I'd be shocked if he plays. I've had some hamstring injuries in my life, but that looked pretty bad. And he is the key to their defense. They keep him out there on an island, and without him, they just have no coverage in the secondary, and Tom Brady should be able to eat them alive. Sony Michel looks good, and Rex Burkhead's coming off IR too, which gives them a whole other dimension, and I think the Patriots can cover this.
Okay, we'll see you on Sunday. We'll see if I can keep my hot streak in the NFL. All right, well, let's transition to college hoops. We've got, you're going to the game tonight with Rob, or that's Broccoli Bob to everybody else. That should be fun. So what are some of the things you're eyeing in college basketball right now?
Yeah, just a couple of headlines from the last week. I'm sure everyone saw Duke losing to Gonzaga out in Maui. That was a great finish. Kansas held off Tennessee in Madison Square Garden, even though we had Tennessee here on the podcast. Villanova got back right and beat Florida State, and Virginia was quite impressive down in Atlantis with their stifling defense. One thing I noted there in Atlantis, which I'm going to put in my head for next year, is I think every game went under in that tournament.
Interesting.
It's a very interesting setup there in the ballroom with the shot lines being off. So something I'll remember for next year.
All right. Yeah, and Michigan State too in Vegas.
Yeah, Michigan State played really well, whipping UCLA, and then coming back against Texas to win the Las Vegas crown. And another thing that came out just yesterday was Vanderbilt freshman point guard Darius Garland is out for the season with a torn meniscus.
That's too bad.
Vanderbilt hasn't been very good this year, and they're only going to be worse now.
Gotcha. Fade Vanderbilt. And then you've got some plays for this coming week, Friday, Saturday, Sunday?
Yeah, there's one game that I looked for on Wednesday, the Big Ten ACC Challenge. Virginia is going to Maryland, and I'm going to be looking to play this game under the total. I think it just popped up at 130, and Virginia's defense and slow pace should keep this game under easily.
They are definitely an under machine.
The next game I was looking at Saturday is Gonzaga traveling to Creighton. Mm-hmm. And my ratings have the Gonzaga Bulldogs as 10 points better than Creighton on a neutral floor.
Okay.
And if you take out the 4 for home court, it should be about 6. So I'm expecting the line to come out at that point or a little bit less. And I'll be taking Gonzaga to win this game with their rebounding edge and their 4th-ranked 2-point field goal percentage. They should be able to hold Creighton off pretty easily on the road.
All right. Sounds good. They're a good team. And then one of your teams, Purdue at Michigan?
Yeah, another under I'm going to be eyeing is the Big Ten opener for both mm-hmm. Purdue and Michigan this Saturday. They'll be playing in Ann Arbor this Saturday, and I like the under in this game. I'm expecting that it's going to open up near 135, 136 range.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, we know that Purdue has a high-flying offense, but this Michigan Wolverines team has the number one rated defense and plays at one of the slowest paces in the nation,
mm-hmm.
ranked 335 in pace. I think that the Michigan team will be able to control the pace of the game at home, and they should be able to keep this game under the total.
Okay. They're very deliberate, for sure. So I haven't been able to dig into my index yet, figuring out the KenPom versus AP work, but it sounds like you've put together your own index.
Yeah, I spent some time over the break working on a little bit of an algorithm
of
sorts. I've taken all the KenPom data and massaged it a little bit, thrown it into the mixer, added a little action flavor.
Nice.
And I spit out my own action NCAA hoops power ratings.
Perfect. So what do we got here?
I've got Duke at number one, despite the loss to Gonzaga.
Okay.
Surprisingly, North Carolina at number two.
Interesting.
Followed by Kansas, Gonzaga, Michigan State at 5, Nevada 6, Virginia 7, Michigan, Auburn, and Purdue in the top 10.
Okay. I know some of those don't match up with the AP for sure.
Yeah.
Especially when I'm looking at Michigan State. I don't think Michigan's that high, right? I mean, I know that they play great basketball, but at least on the public eye, they're not looking that great.
Yeah, I think Michigan's in the top 10, barely, seven, 8, or 9 somewhere.
Okay, that's high. That's high. But North Carolina, that's definitely, for the metric, is that because of rebounding? You said you like rebounding quite a bit?
Yeah, the rebounding metrics are a little bit heavy in my analysis. I think that rebounding is a big key to college basketball.
It is.
And North Carolina holds a serious edge against their opponents thus far.
They always just, they rebound the crap out of the ball. That's kind of what Roy Williams does. But we'll see how this plays out. I mean, early in the season, it's hard to figure out. There are these big tournaments, so that's good, but as they get into conference play, it's a little bit easier to figure out who's better than others, but
I like it. I'm certainly going to go easy a little bit here on the algorithm to start out the season, because I think as more and more data comes in, KenPom refines his, and hopefully I can refine mine a little bit, and as we roll into January, February, March, I'll be really clicking.
I'm ready. I'm ready to put my stuff together. I think what will happen is next week, with the college championships kind of gone for football, I'll be able to focus more on basketball a little bit early for me. I usually do it around Christmas time. This is great to get started. And then, we can really go at it, because I'd anticipate kind of replacing those college football bets with college basketball bets. So.
Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, we'll probably do a deep dive into the college football bowl season when that comes out, but certainly won't carry as much weight here on the podcast.
Exactly, exactly. All right. Well, I think that wraps up our episode here, episode 14 of the Side Action Podcast. Follow us at Side Action Pod on Twitter. Follow me personally at Wegspool on Twitter.
And you can follow me on Twitter at 31SRoberts.
I want to thank everybody for rating us and telling your friends. I think we have a new outlet, right? We're out on...
We're out finally on Spotify.
Spotify, that's right.
And also looking to open up a YouTube channel so that those of you who prefer to listen to podcasts on YouTube can do that there from your desktop.
Great. I will be reaching out to Violetta. I was on vacation there, so I will. For our potential live event, we're going to probably try to do one of those during the basketball season, college basketball season. So you guys can meet us out and kind of get some betting advice and get some action. We definitely had a good time doing the football the other week or so.
Yeah, and certainly try and track us down and see if you can score yourself a side action coaster.
Yeah, there's only a couple limited edition signed coasters out there, but but the regular coasters are out in full distribution, so help yourself. All right, well, thanks everybody for joining us, and we'll check you out next week.
Yep, best of luck with all your wagers, and let's keep that bankroll growing.
Absolutely.
That's a wrap for this episode of the Side Action Podcast. We appreciate all of your listens, and thank you for joining us. We'll see you all again next week on Thursday for some more hot picks and side action. Side Action Podcast, its owners and associates take no responsibility for the opinions or statements made by the show hosts or their guests. Statements or show topics are not necessarily the beliefs of this podcast, and opinions between talk show hosts may conflict. Individuals following the advice given on the podcast accept their own risk of losses from wagers made, as the Side Action Podcast, its owners, hosts, associates, or guests will not guarantee any advice given. The opinions and advice given on the Side Action Podcast is for entertainment purposes only. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Intro and outro and transition music credits. Song titles, Jerry 5 and District 4 by Kevin MacLeod at incompetech.org. Licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0. creativecommons.org/licenses/by 3.0.